Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell, and they call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. We'd like to thank you for tuning in to today's show. Very, very special guest that's going to be coming on later on the show. But right now, our radio aficionado live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our man, our hero on the radio here at the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Bob Murray. What's going on, brother?
That's very good. Thank you for the introduction. Man, cool. It's a beautiful day here, though. Yeah, this is like the bonus 4th of July weekend. We had like 2 4th of Julys this year, you know? And actually, Fort Carbon, right outside Pottsville here, it's pretty legendary in the area for their for the 4th of July, but the fireworks will be tomorrow night. We got a little bit of rain there on Wednesday. It was weird. It was a nice day, and then it rained out. So it'll keep going right on through till Sunday.
Yeah, look, you know, up around that wood,
the rain sometimes could
be good. You know, around this time of year, things get dried out. There'd be a big old beer bonfire in the woods. They let the fireworks boom. Next thing you know, it hits that brush up in flames and go. It spoils the parties that are happening with the cakes in the woods around this time of year. You know.
Exactly.
Good old PA, baby. But Bob, what do we got all going around on, you know? But Bob, first of all, before we get to you, I like to say this. A friend of ours that we have reached out to, the Amato family, he's a boxing historian, today he's not doing very well, to my understanding. I got some calls. So, you know, we send a letter, a small video out to the family. But we're asking the boxing family to keep him in his in their prayers. He's a credit to boxing, and so is his family. So, you know, we wish them well through their endeavor, through the sickness that he's up under. You know?
Very good, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So without further ado, Bob, what's going on around the world, man? Last week, we dropped off the mark, Bob. You got to pick the mark up, baby. Just what you tell me. We're going to pick it up. What do we got going on? How many countries does it look like we may go to today?
We got 18. We'll do the 18. Then we'll come back. We've got some other news to talk about, some movement in some of the divisions, too. But let's just look at the calendar. Let's go around the world. All right, here we go. The Save Mart Arena. We're starting here in Fresno, California, in the USA. That's the big spot tonight here where – Jose Carlos Ramirez, he's 22-0, 16 wins by KO. He defends his WBC World Super Lightweight belt against Daniel Connor, 30-3, 11 KOs. Also, Andy Ventures, 20-0-1, defends his WBC Continental America Super Featherweight crown against his challenger, Frank D'Alba. He's 22-3-2. Also on that card, welterweight Jesus Kavalauskas, 19-0, 16 KOs, and Juan Carlos Abreu, 21-3-1. They both seek the NABF welterweight title. And heavyweight Andy the Destroyer Ruiz Jr., he's 30-1 with 20 KOs. And remember, his only loss came back in December 16 when he lost a majority decision to Joseph Parker for that WBO world title. And I say we'll get back to some more of the heavyweight news after we get done this, but Andy Ruiz Jr. back in action tonight. He takes on Kevin Johnson. He's 32-9-1, 16 KOs. He's a former international champion as well. Corpus Christi, Texas will feature the female lightweight battle between Selena, the Aztec Queen Barrios. He's 3-0 with 1 KO. And Aida Satabadanova. He's 3-0-1. And in OKC, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma highlights with the Zapir Rasulov, 32-1, 28 wins by KOs versus Justin Johnson, 6-15-6, and that's a super lightweight contest. Big title fight in Astana, Kazakhstan tonight, where Beyburt Shuminov, 17-2, 11 KOs, seeks to regain his now vacant WBA World Cruiserweight crown against Hizmi Alkhankhania, who's 30-1, 17 KOs. And the undercard features the super middleweight matchup of Idos Yoshibolnia. She's 7-0 versus Isma Yelnyayev. And over here, Maidstone, Kent, in the UK, you know, everybody right now is watching that World Cup game. Last I checked before we came on the air, England had taken a 1-0 lead over Sweden. And, you know, that's why we're on the internet, so you can listen to the show later, because everybody in England is watching the World Cup game right now. That's the way it goes. But you'll get down to the Final Four. We could have France versus England. Wow. So, anyway, the big fight tonight in Maidstone, Kent, UK. That highlights the super featherweight matchup of Chris Lawrence, 9-1, and Ricky Starkey, who's 2-8-2. While over in Dudley in West Midlands, it's Matt Senn versus Josh Burke in a cruiserweight clash. Madrid, Spain features the super featherweight battle between Eduardo Cobos and Ruben Garcia. Leverkusen, Germany features the debut of cruiserweight Kai Hildebrandt and heavyweight Daniel Balabula. Over in Lombardia, Italy, they highlight with the David Bula versus Nikusor Patku highlight lightweight contest. While over in Roma, they host the super middleweight clashers Giacomo Battoni and Danilo Chioce. Marseille, France hosts the female lightweight battle between Miriam Delau, 15-8-3, and Monica Gentili, she's 6-8. And Helmond, Netherlands, they highlight their card with Melvin Wassing taking on Bilal Massoudi in a welterweight clash in the Gordina Serbia. The cruiserweight contest between Veljko Bezbatovic and Danilo Sacon tops the card over there. Coming back over here around North America continent, we've got Guadalajara, Mexico, featuring a light flyweight battle tonight between Jose Argumedo, 21-4-1, 13 KOs. And Juan Caleros, he's 28-81 with 16 KOs. Over in Acuna City is lightweight Alejandro Zuniga, 17-1, 9 by KOs. He takes on Eliud Montoya, 12-22-3. 22-1 bantamweight Gerardo Castillo takes on Ivan Alejandro Najera as part of the undercard. Tijuana hosts Javier Mendoza, he's 24-4-1 versus Julio Castillo, 10-2-4. And Panama City, Panama tops their night off with the Fernando Arenas versus Alexander Abuelas super flyweight match. Concepcion, Chile features Juan Jimenez in a super featherweight bout. And Camisani, Brazil will feature Wilton dos Santos versus Genivaldo dos Santos Silva in a super bantamweight battle. Two big fights in Mansfield, Queensland, Australia today, where Jaden Nichols, 7-0-1, steps in with Benjamin Kelleher. He's 8-1-2, and that's for the Australian cruiserweight title. We'll also see April Adams. She's 9-1-1, taking on Nershuhadi, the sniper Wellesley. She's 8-1, and that's a female super bantamweight headliner. In Manila, Philippines, the WBC Asian Boxing Council Continental Flyweight title goes to the winner of the Chris Alfonte, 14-6-1 versus Arden Viale, 33-12-4 fight. And over in Panama City, it's Dave Penalosa, 12-0 against Ricky Manifold, 27-34-2 at the featherweight clash. Over in Tokyo, Japan, they feature the unbeaten flyweight Junta Nakatani, 15-0, 11 KOs versus Dexter Alimento, 13-3 with 9 KOs. And just one medal for Sunday in Budapest, Hungary, unbeaten Emma Kozan. She's 13-0, 8 KOs. She's defending her WBF and IBF World Female Middleweight titles. And now I noticed this morning that it was against an opponent to be determined, because Mapul Nugubane, who was scheduled for that, she stepped out. So just wanted to make a little note there as far as what's happening in that title fight tomorrow. And there's our 18 countries taking a look around the world. And, some good fights happening. Some good things going on, and a couple of rematches that some people have been looking forward to. And there we go, Aaron.
Yeah, 18 countries around the world, Bob. Hey, look, but we have to mention, Bob, without a doubt, Anthony Joshua signing a two-fight deal for September of this year and April
September
of next
22nd,
year.
September 22nd, yeah. Yeah, it's at Wembley Stadium, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that first one will be the Povetkin fight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like Povetkin, what they're saying, he really hasn't signed the contract. And it looks like, Bob, it'll be next week sometime before they finish the contract workup, to my understanding. That's what they're saying. But, you know, this is great. You know, Anthony Joshua, being from North London, you know, born and raised in the North End,
as they say. You know, it's something mm-hmm. that's in his blood. If he can get the crowd that he got with his last fight against Parker, 90-some thousand, they're talking about the seating capacity at Wembley will be 100-and-some thousand fans. Let me tell you what. I was with Don King when he set the record with Julio Cesar Chavez with Greg Hogan for most to ever witness a fight in an arena in Azteca Stadium down in Mexico City, man. Let me tell you, the people sit so far they had to raise the stage, Bob.
It made up off the ground.
And the people look like ants way up there in those seats, but it's electrifying the audience with that type of crowd when it comes to boxing, man. It's just a phenomenal experience. And, you know, I'm happy that the young man can draw that over there. You know, I was with Tim Witherspoon training him when he fought Frank Bruno in Wembley Stadium. And guess what, Bob? Muhammad Ali was with us. When we trained in Basildon, London, Muhammad Ali came over and spent the whole month with us training and came into Wembley Stadium with us. And when, and matter of fact, Bob, Ali got us out the stadium. They wanted to kill us, man. You know, for nothing, dear old Frank Bruno. They were throwing coins, bottles, all, man. And going back to the dressing room, Bob, it was like going down a gauntlet. We had to crawl on our hands and knees, and Tim, they were after him. And we had maybe around about 100, 200 yards to the ring. And when we got halfway through, man, all of us just said sprint. And we took off running. You know, the people were reaching over to Bobby's hit us. And so the funny thing, they were trying to tear down the gate, Bob.
And yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they were trying to tear down the gate to get to us. So Ali makes it back to the dressing room, right? So they're out there screaming, Ali, Ali, and they're ripping at the fence, right? So it's time for us to leave, and they're out there. The bus is waiting for us, but they wouldn't let us get out to the bus. So Ali comes out of the gate. It's like Moses parting the Red Sea. Ali says, calm down. Now, all these fans, Ali tell them to calm down. It was complete silence, Bob. And Ali told them, hey, it was a gallant fight in that both of them fought a good fight, and Frank Bruno fought a good fight, but Tim Witherspoon end up winning. And he said, Tim Witherspoon is with me, and we're going to come out together. So we're all going to get on the bus. He said, I don't want nobody to do anything to Tim. He's with me. We're going to come out. So Don King, all of us come out, and we get on the bus. It's still quiet now. So Ali's the last one to get on the bus because he, you know, he got them all being quiet. So the next thing you know, the last person to get on the bus, they start chanting, Ali, Ali. So Ali get on the bus, right? He get off the bus, tell them to quiet down, right? They get quiet. When he go back in the bus, they start chanting, Ali, and Ali kept doing that for a while. It was an amazing night. It was amazing night. For a legend tale, that's really something. And in that fight there, there was over, I think, 45 and 50,000 fans. And at that time, that was considered a lot of fans. And it is a lot of fans, you know, 50,000
yes,
people,
it is,
man.
Yeah.
That's a large crowd. But hats off to him. I hope the thing gets well. I hope Deontay Wilder gets on one of those big dates, because how are you going to beat that, you know, with that type of fans? But also, Bob, over there, I think Parker, the gentleman who just fought Anthony Joshua, his last fight, he's fighting white, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and also we just threw that other name out at tonight, also fighting tonight, is Andy Ruiz Jr. Now, who lost, his only loss was to Parker. They mentioned that in our little look at the, what's happening tonight, too. So a little more action there, looking to see who's getting where, too. Yeah. So
yeah.
We'll see what Parker looks like. Yeah. When
yeah,
he gets back in the game.
Yeah. And Dave Hayes said he's going to work with Parker and spar with him in the gym and, you know, and advise him on some tactics with White, you know. And, you know, Hayes, if you don't remember Dave Hayes, he's the former WBO champion. So, hey, look,
right.
Man, there's a lot of things going on, you know, over there. They got a lot of good boxes, good match boxes on the move, Bob.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah, and there's a lot more, too, happening, you know, with that streaming service, too. And also the WBSS, the World Boxing Super Series, is happening as well, too. And they're going to be starting off the next year's worth in September. And Matchroom Boxing and Eddie Hearn and the DAZN streaming service is ready to broadcast every one of those fights, is what they said this week, too. And as we were talking as well coming up, I've been looking forward to that Garcia-Usyk cruiserweight final for a while now. That was postponed a bit, and that's finally going to be happening in 2 weeks. They also have the Groves versus Smith fight as well, the super middleweight. And just this week, too, James DeGale, he vacated his IBF super middleweight crown, and Jose Uzgategui at 27-2, 23 KO. He's the new champ. And a lot of people are thinking that DeGale is just waiting to see who comes out of that Groves-Smith fight to see if he can get in on some of that action. So that's a little bit of the news there with the World Boxing Super Series, too. And we want to mention, too, that next week we get to see Manny Pacquiao back in action as well, too. The date's finally coming up upon us as well.
Yeah, I want to see how Manny Pacquiao, how he does, you know, the rest of the body, you know. Is his mind refreshed now that he has a new team with Freddie Roach? He said bye-bye to. Let's see if he can go out and demonstrate if his spirit is renewed. You know?
Right, yeah, that's what everybody wants to see. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, it finally has come upon us here. And some of these other fights. We had a little slow a couple of weeks here over, you know, the beginning of July, the end of June. But we're saying things are starting to pick up, and there's some nice fights between now and we're into September, really, you know, with these finals for the World Boxing Super Series with the Ali Trophy on the line and the new one starting up in September, so to look forward to as well.
Yeah,
and of course, if we're looking at that, you know, 9/22, September 22nd, you know, that's really going to happen with Povetkin and Wembley with Joshua, you know. So that's circled. It's on the calendar day now, you know. See what happens.
Yeah. Hey, look. One thing I wish it would happen. You know, the big fights are hard to make, but when you get a heavyweight champion, if he's fighting regular, it does something to the rest of boxing. It sparks it. It's the history of the game. People love to see these heavyweights in the clash. But when you get a good heavyweight that people want to see, he's a crowd pleaser, not a crowd teaser, and people are coming out to see him, witness him, and watch him on the on the scene and on the screen around the world. That makes for good boxing overall in general. You know, boxing does very well when this happens. You know, so I'm hoping that they get the biz going on with that. I hope they sign them contracts, man, and let's get to these heavyweight championship fights going on, man.
I know.
You know, as Mills Lane used to say, get it on, get it on, let's get it on.
Mills Lane, yeah.
You know, that's really good. You know, with England, with its intense boxing history, these things are really, really good, man, with boxing. And Matchbox boxing with Eddie Hearns, man, they're putting on some fights over there that are second to none. You know, Bob, we like to get involved with that streaming with Eddie Hearns. I think we have a platform that's second to none. I think that our professional team that we have, that we can add something kind of special with Matchbox to deliver certain kinds of content that are second to none. And, Eddie, if you listen, give me a call. Give us a call. We'd like to talk to you. We're reaching out to you so we can talk to you to try to make things happen. I know the U.S. market is something you want to get in into, and I think that we have an exciting team that can make those things happen in the U.S. You know what I mean, Bob? That would be
I would love to. Exactly. And the whole thing, the whole worldwide effort that we're involved with, plus also DAZN, the streaming service now. You know, they're in Japan, they're in Canada, they're around other places too. Eddie's big thing is making it work in North America, basically the U.S., though, because it's already kind of there in Canada. So it's there, and he's talking about doing all the next phase of the World Boxing Super Series, all streaming here and, you know, all live and everything else. So there's a nice platform that we're all trying to climb up on here, but it's there and it's real and it looks like, you know, the future. It's really good. You know, people want to see.
Oh, yeah.
And this this is where it's going
kids,
now. You tune these in on the internet. Yeah. Boom.
England's on the boom. Hey, look, don't forget our man, Tyson Fury. I mean, Mr. Chris Maddox.
He's the charismatic.
Hey, look. Yes. You could say what they want about Tyson Fury. He keeps it interesting, man.
He gets eyeballs on it. Yeah, he does. He gets in the ring. People want to watch it. Yeah, he does. He's one of those guys. Yeah.
He's like one of these wrestling types of guys. He says things. He does things. And it's all in fun because you got to laugh at him, some of the stuff he says and what he does. You know, you have to say, "Oh man!" When you see it, you say, "Did he just say that?" You know, did he really say? Does he mean that? Tyson Fury goes one time. He goes, he says, "Wilder and Joshua, I'd take them on both on one night." I said, "Why?" He said, "Don't worry."
Yeah.
So when Wilder, you know, they're still contemplating that big fight with Anthony Joshua and Wilder, you know, here comes Tyson Fury out of the scene. He says, "Don't worry about nothing, Wilder." He says, "I can pack him in England just like." Come on over and sign the contract. he keeps it interesting. You know, you have to do that on this level, you know, to keep things going, keep things in the media. You know, both of them, Frank Warren and Eddie Hearns, are doing a magnificent job that keeping their champions out there in the media and keeping it going. You know, it's tough. It's a tough sell, you know, all the time, you know. But the English press is eating it up. They're writing about it. They're talking about it. And when you have that going on, you know, that makes it something kind of special for boxing. You know what I mean? So, hey, man, it's nothing but a real blessing for those things to be happening. And it makes guys bigger, and it makes people want to come out and watch. You know, you pick up them tabloid newspapers and stuff like that. When you see them guys in there, you say, what? They even got, you know, the tabloids, Access Hollywood, and all of that. Stuff going on in the magazine. But that's what makes guys big, man. That's what makes people want to come out and watch him, Bob, you know?
Yes. Oh, that's exactly it. Exactly the reason. And it's all media, you know, there is no bad publicity, as you used to say, you know?
Yeah.
Like, an old friend of mine used to say, The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. Yeah. So take it from there.
Yeah, man. It's really, really something when you go that. So, hey, look. And it wasn't Rita Haywood last week, Jack Johnson's great-great-niece? Isn't she something?
Oh, my heavens, it's beautiful. You know, it was. It was great to have her on two times. And, you know, it was just really great expanding the whole concept and the whole thing that we're dealing here with, and you're doing, especially leading the way with the Jack Johnson thing. You know, I was just talking to people over the last holidays. You know, there was block parties that we have here and these little festivals and just people getting about. And talking to people, and, you know, if you would have done this a couple months ago and just said Jack Johnson is great, great niece and blah, blah, no way would have, like, okay, whatever. But everybody's like, wow, no kidding, you know, blah, blah, what was it like? Everyone's going to go back and check it out and this and that, you know. So it was something great just because, and she told some great stories, and it was really something special.
Yeah, man. And look, Bob, you know, when you talk about something special, you know, Jack Johnson's niece, Linda E. Haywood, that was on the show. But, Bob, let me tell you, we'd like to thank her for coming on to the World Boxing Review radio show. To give us that piece. She's coming down to North Carolina with us at the end of the month to go over some things. But, Bob, let me tell you, our next guest is in the queue, and we're going to bring him in here in a minute. You know, we like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. Hey, look, my name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, and our radio aficionado, Bob Murray's on the line. But our special guest is a great, great, great legend in his own right, Harold Bell, brother. Welcome to the show, brother. Mr. Bell, brother Bell.
I need to hire you as my PR man, boy.
Hey, there you go.
Hey, yeah, why not? Yeah. Hey, look.
Yeah, hey, we're all into it. It was all promotion.
I learned from the best, bro, you, bro. I remember when you were up in Deer Lake, man. I was a young man around Muhammad Ali, brother, and with the TV cameras doing the radio show up in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, down in Washington, when it comes to politics and sports and being an interviewer, a commentator. Bro, when they mention Harold Bell, it's something kind of special. You're a mentor and all of that to me. And I'm just excited to have you on the show today, man. Welcome, brother.
Thank you so much, man. It was so great catching up with you after all of these years, man. I couldn't figure out where you were. I would see you here and there, but I couldn't get in touch. And just happened to be talking to Roy Foreman, my main man, the other day. And out of his mouth comes Aaron Snowball. I said, what? Man, give me Earl's number, man. And of course, that's where we are now, man. I'm really honored. And Earl, congratulations, man, being inducted into the National Boxing Hall of Fame. Of course, for those of you who don't know, Earl is the youngest trainer to ever be work a corner of a heavyweight champion. I'm talking about Mike Tyson, and get ready to go into another Hall of Fame in New Jersey State, I understand, in November. So congratulations, my brother.
Yes.
You deserve it.
Man, thank you. It's a lot of time spent away from home, as you well know. You don't get nothing without hard work, man. But brother, today's about you, brother Bell. Tell us, man, in this great career that you have, you know, who helped mentor you? You know, I remember back in the day you had mentioned something to me about games, you know, the great games. Explain something about that.
Coming to Winston-Salem, man, I mean, you in my territory, man. I got a football, basketball scholarship down to Winston-Salem State. And I was one of those athletes. All I cared about was playing ball. I didn't have grades to go to the bathroom. But my high school coach saw something in me, man, because I stayed in so much trouble. I got kicked off this team and that team because of being a selfish ball player. I always wanted the ball in my hand. Not that I was a great athlete, but when the game was on the line, I wanted the ball in my hands. And so that got me in a lot of trouble. So my high school coach talked Clarence Big House Gaines into giving me a scholarship, man, and coming to Winston-Salem saved my life. You hear what I said, man? Because I was the streets, man. I was in the streets, Earn, going to hell in a hurry, man, you know. I come out of a single-parent home, man. My mother tried to raise three boys by herself between my grandmother and my mother, man, and she caught hell, man. But I've been blessed, man. And then, of course, how I got into this whole media thing was through a legendary friend of mine, a guy by the name of Petey Green, man, who's a legendary radio and television
Green,
host here in town. Yeah, and he gave me 5 minutes on the air in 1965 to talk sports because Petey loves sports. So he gave me 5 minutes, man. I was able to parlay that into a half-hour talk show with a guy by the name of Bobby Bennett on WOL. Then the next year, 1970, I moved out and got my own show on WOK Radio, Inside Sports. I am the original Inside Sports. My wife gave me that title at the dinner table one night. I asked, I said, look, Hattie, I'm getting ready to do this new sports talk show. What you think the title should be? Right off the top of her head, she said, Inside Sports, Aaron. And my lawyer told me when I first went on the air, he said, Harold, trade or copyright this name because it's going to be hot. And I didn't listen to him, Aaron, because I was ego tripping, so glad to be on the radio, man. Forgot all about it. And of course, about 1978, the Washington Post, who I've been having their sports writers on my show because I was the number one sports talk show in D.C. and the only brother with a sports talk show, they stole Inside Sports from me, man, and went up to New York and started Inside Sports Magazine, which didn't last, but they copyrighted her. And so they're always talking about black folks are lazy. We don't want to work, but they take from us. They take from us. So that's why I'm sitting where I am today, because the Petey Green gave me a hell of a break, and then Sonny Hill picked it up from there to be a mentor.
Yeah, and man, talking about Sonny Hill George Foreman's brother, you know, he's part of Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame, and you know, we worked together on that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, those two guys kind of picked me up, man. Sonny Hill, when I first got into the business, we became great friends, and we would network. You're talking about networking, man. Sonny would introduce me to everybody he knew, and you know he knew everybody.
and of course, Sonny did.
George and I became friends because I met George here in Washington, D.C., when he came home from the Olympic Games, Harry Barnett. I know you know Harry Barnett. Harry became George's lawyer, and that's how I hooked up with George and eventually hooked up with Roy. You know, but one of the things, man, I want to talk about, man, is you and this Jack Johnson exhibit, man. Tell me about that, because Jack Johnson is one of my heroes.
Well, we got involved, you know. I found out as a young man about Jack Johnson through Muhammad Ali and Deer Lake. You know, how Ali used to preach about him, the things he did with them, the play with that they did, the Great White Hope. But it was inspiring to keep on going and to keep on doing it. But where he lost his life is where my mother was born and raised in North Carolina in Franklin County. So I got an opportunity to bring where his accident was to life for the TDA board, which is the Tourism Development Board, and we received a grant to bring back Jack Johnson to life. So we got a lot of people to sign on to the project, from boxing historians to state representatives, senators, and things, to endorse the project that we were endowed in, and to bring him back to life and to help try to spark, maybe to get him a pardon. That's something he tried to do when he was actually living. He was the first one, when he was locked up, to write his pardon. So we developed the team and the exhibit and all of that. We have artifacts and stuff. You know, his car was left there for a long, long time. in Franklinton. So a lot of things came about. So that's how it is. We're taking it around and do the Jack Johnson exhibit. We can get people to talk about political issues and bring people together and how can we make America a better place to live through the open the conversation of sports, where people come together for one purpose and one common cause, and that is to make, like Don King all the time said, only in America, and America is the greatest place on this planet to live. So that's what we're doing with that.
Well, Bob, I know you want to jump in here and ask me some questions. I'm wide open.
Well,
Bob,
yeah, just tell me a little more about your relationship. Yeah.
Are you here?
You got me.
Okay, go ahead. I'm here. Go ahead,
I just wanted you to fill us a little bit more about Sunny Hill. I don't know if you're hearing me. Something's happening here.
Yeah, he can hear you. Come up to your phone a little bit, Harold.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sunny Hill, man, is a phenomenal athlete, a radio, television personality, community personality. Sunny Hill is a living legend in, of course, Philadelphia, man. Basketball legend.
Exactly. Yeah, the Philly, the basketball
legend.
Yeah.
And he has mentored a lot of folks, including yours truly, man. So I'm really in debt to Sunny Hill. But so many people at Bob have reached back to help me to get where I am today, man. This has not been a easy journey. It has been a long road and a difficult journey, because when you tell the truth, people always want to hear the truth as long as it's about someone else, but they don't want to hear the truth about themselves. So that's probably why you don't know about Harold Bell, but I've been out here with every radio and television sports talk show format you see in now is the format of the original Inside Sports. I started all of that. I was the first one to have message music. I was the first one to have media roundtables, write my own commentaries. I've got more people in broadcast media today than any other sportscast or broadcaster in the country. I'm talking about James Brown, Michael Wilbon, you name them, John Thompson, Sugar Ray Leonard. All of them came through Harold Bell before they 15 minutes of fame, man.
Let's talk about Sugar Ray Leonard. You did something special for Sugar Ray Leonard back then. Now, I can remember back in those days when he just had came out of the Olympics and things like
that. Right.
He was looking for people to sign and put up money and things like that. And tell that story a little bit about Don and all.
I know we don't have 15 minutes. I want to do a couple of minutes on that. I thank you for bringing that up. When Sugar Ray Leonard came home from the Olympics after winning the gold medal, he thought he was coming home to a ticker tape parade. And, boy, he was in for a big surprise. Once he got to Washington, D.C., he lived out in Palmer Park, a suburb of Washington, D.C., the media wore him out, man. They gave him the blues for having a baby out of wedlock with his wife, his girlfriend, then Juanita. And that's where, you know, the little Ray came in. And they gave him the blues. He lost his self-esteem and went in the house and would not come out. He just didn't want to come out, man. And I was playing tennis down at Anacostia, a tennis playground back in the day. And I look outside the gate, and there's Jinx Morton and Dave Jacobs and another friend of mine named Melvin Jackson. I said, what are these guys down here doing down here? They don't play little tennis. So I left the court and came out. I said, what's going on? So Jinx said, man, look, Ray has locked himself up in the house. He won't come out. He's lost his self-esteem, and he has a lot of respect for you, Harold, and we'd like for you to go over, man, and try to talk him out, man, and to get back in the swing. So the next morning, I went over to Ray's house and knocked on the door, and he opened the door with big crocodile tears in his eyes, and I said a couple choice words to him. I said, man, put that gold medal on, put a suit on and tie, and come on, we're going. And I took him to elementary school. I called the principal to let him know that I was going to be bringing Ray up there. And so I started taking Ray out to elementary schools and let him talk to the little children, because they don't have the same hang-ups that we as adults, you know, the player haters and the naysayers. And Ray got comfortable, so I took him on my show and let him co-host my show on Saturdays to kind of build up his self-esteem. And while I was doing that, Jinx Morton was out looking for some guys to put up money to back Ray to turn pro, because Ray told me he didn't want to turn pro. He wanted to get an education to help Juanita and Lil Ray. So I didn't have no idea what was going on until one morning I'm laying in the bed, and who calls me but Don King. Harold, what you doing? I said, man, I'm sleeping. It's about 7:30 in the morning. I'm sleeping. Man, get your ass up and get on down here to the hotel. Sugar Ray Leonard is having a press conference. He's getting ready to turn pro. I said, what? And, of course, that's why I ended up down at the press conference at the National Press Building. And I saw right before my eyes Ray had decided to turn pro. Angelo Dundee was there. Larry Holmes was there. Don King. And, of course, you know what happened after that. Ray became the first boxer to earn $100 million. And he has never come back and did anything in the community. And he did thank me over the air after he beat Benitez for the championship. He called in and said he wanted to thank me because I was there for him when no one else was. And that's it, man. So, you know, that when you get 2 hours in our community, you think you know it more than anybody else, and you think you're smarter than anybody else. And that's what happened to Ray Leonard. It's a long story, but it's all going to be in my new book called Harold Bell's Legends of Inside Sports, My Walk Through Sports History with Champions and Chumps. And that'd be coming out in about another week. And you can,
hey,
and you can go up on.
Let's say, Harold, let's talk about this champ, Chump, but a great champion. Muhammad Ali, you did something special. He gave you something special after the fight in Zaire, man. Tell us a little bit about that, man, because we want to go get this book. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, Muhammad Ali and I became friends when he came to Washington, D.C., and was speaking up on Howard University during the turmoil of him not turning the draft down, man. And I met him up on Howard University, and it just went on from there, man. We became great friends. And to make a long story short about Zaire, I told Muhammad Ali when he was in Cleveland for doing an exhibition for Children's Hospital that I wanted to do a one-on-one interview with him, you know, for television. And so he never forgot that. I remember he said, well, come on to Chicago, let's talk. So I went to Chicago in 1974. I flew up with my buddy, and Pat Patterson, his security man, picked us up at the airport and took us to the gym, and the place was packed, you know, with all media stuff. And he working out, and I had no idea that he was there. But after he got through working out, he went back to the dressing room, and he sent his brother Rockman to get me. So I went back to the dressing room. It was just me, him, and the guy who was doing the massage. You know who that was.
Yeah, Louis Correa.
So I sat down in front of him. He said, what you want to do, man? I said, I want to do a special for television, you know, just you, me and you one-on-one. He said, okay, good. We can go to Zaire and do the interview. I said, what? Zaire? Man, I ain't going to Zaire. I was scared to fly across all that water, Aaron. he called me chicken and all kinds of stuff. But after it was all over, he said, look here. Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Since you're not going to Zaire, you'll be the first one that I give an interview when I get back to the United States. Well, you know how Muhammad Ali always talking the talk. I said, I ain't paid no attention to him. I said, okay, champ. So we went out and had dinner, and Pat took us back to the airport, and I caught my plane back, and I went down to Constitution Hall to watch the fight on closed circuit, man. I was scared to death.
Right.
I thought Big Joe Foreman going to hurt him, man, you know? So, man,
yeah,
of course, the upset. I'm lying home in the bed raining one night, about 10 o'clock, and after the fight, and I pick up the phone. I said, who's calling, please? I was still asleep. He said, let me speak to Harold Bell. I said, who's calling, man? He said, fool, this is the heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali. I said, straight up in the bed. I said, straight up. So he said, you still want to do that interview? I said, yeah, man. He said, well, look, I'm in New York. This is where I am. Bring your camera crew. This was Sunday night. Bring your camera crew up on Monday. I don't have no camera crew. I don't have no money. I don't get paid till Friday. I don't know what to do. So I called my boy Rodney Brown, my partner, and he said, man, look, Harold, we got cameras here at PBS. I got the credit card, and Will got the car, and we rode up to New York City that Monday morning, and there he was standing there in the doorway waiting for us, man. And I got one of the great one-on-one interviews that you ever want to see. Copyrighted, Earn, copyrighted.
Yeah,
and,
that's
man,
right.
That was fantastic, man. So
I'm
just so happy
look,
about this book.
We
have our boxing historian. He's waiting on the queue here. Henry Haskup, man, welcome to the show, brother. This is Harold Bell we're talking to. I know we're going over a little bit, but welcome to the show, Henry.
I'm just enjoying Harold's stories. I mean, you know, it's fantastic hearing about Sugar Ray Leonard and what he went through and Muhammad Ali. I mean, I can't wait for that book to come out. Yeah,
right the screen right now, so you guys will be able to see it because this show is going to be on YouTube, and I'm showing my book. You can get my book. All you got to do is go to blackmeninamerica.com and go to my page, and you'll see how to order the book. And,
okay.
Like I say, man, it's fabulous, man. It's something like you've never read before. It's not he say, she say. It's my up-close and personal relationship with Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Bernard Hawkins, Alexis Arguello, Earn Pryor, Emmanuel Stewart, Tommy Hearns, you name it. Up close and personal, man. So I am excited.
Yeah, but you forgot one person. You didn't put me in there, Al. You forgot one person. You didn't put me in there. But that makes for book two.
That's right. You are in the thank you.
Look, Harold, we got
that'll be on the second edition.
The second edition is going to be great. We're counting on it. Like I told you, I'm not buying mine online. I'm coming to buy it off.
That's right.
Book off you personally.
That's right.
And you have to sign mine personally through the mail in front of me so we can sit down and talk, man. We had a lot of great fun throughout the years, man. And as always, Harold, thank you for your inspiration, your kind words, your mentoring thoughts, your guidance. You know, you ain't a young man no more. You're 80 years old. But
80
you're
years
still young
old,
in
man.
Spirit. 80 years old, man.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for all the blessings that you installed on me. You know, you inspire me to do something like this here, similar to what happened to you, Bob Murray on there. He did something like that for me. But through the years, you inspire me. Give it a go. Give it a try. And it happened, man. And I want to thank you for coming on the World Boxing Review radio show, brother.
Okay, looking forward to come back. I want to say one thing, man. It hadn't been for you and Carl King, I would have not survived the Don King era. So thank you, brother. Thank you.
You're welcome, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah. Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, look. We'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. I'm Aaron Snow. They call the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, the radio aficionado Bob Murray, and our boxing historian, Henry Haskup, man, who's doing Bobby Chess, man. Come on, what do we got? I know we ran over a little bit, but what do we got on Bobby Chess?
Yeah, well, Bobby Chess was one of my favorite fighters. He actually started when he was like 10 years old. His father brought him to Lou Costello Sportsman Club in Paterson, New Jersey, when it was located on Gould Ave. And right away, you know, his father brought his two brothers and Bobby. But right away, they found out that Bobby had some talent. I mean, he was going against, sparring against some of the best around, you know, much heavier kids and everything, and doing very, very well. I mean, the first time I ever saw Bobby was at the Garfield Girls Club a couple of years later. It was the very first time I was able to sit by the ringside. I had a chair, no table in front of me. I remember getting a popcorn and soda, and Charlie Vazari was there, Tippy Larkin was there, and he told me to sit there, right there. So I sat right there, I sat down, I heard the bell ring, and all of a sudden, a fighter come flying through the ropes into my lap. My popcorn went one way, my soda went the other. I mean, I was sprawled all over the ring, all over the gym floor, and I'm saying, who the heck was that, you know? And that was Bobby Chess hitting his opponent outside the ring. So that was my, you know, the first time I ever met him. And, you know, afterwards I try to, you know, get a hold of him. But, you know, I did congratulate him. But the thing was, he was mobbed with a bunch of females. I mean, even then, he was only a young teenager. All these girls just clamored over him. And so then I start following him. I mean, he won 2 junior Olympic state titles, 2 regional titles. He was a bronze medal winner in the nationals. He had an amateur record of 22-4. He actually represented the United States of America in 2 international competitions. And he was supposed to fight another one in March of 1980. But he got in a car crash and broke his nose, and he was unable to go. But good thing, because the plane that was going to Poland, it was going to be a tri-state meet between the United States, Italy, and Poland, they crashed and killed everybody on board. And he was, you know, devastated by that. But the thing was that, you know, it really saved his life by not being on that plane. So that was, you know, I guess a godsend. But, you know, he continued, you know, a few months later he turned pro. He started in Ice World in 1980, and I went to that fight, and he knocked the guy out in the first round, as usual. I mean, he was a spectacular individual as a fighter at that time. He started fighting even better guys almost right away. Bruce DeMouse Strauss, he beat. I remember going to that fight in Ice World. He knocked him out in the 4th round. And then he beat a guy by the name of Tony Mariola in the 2nd round, Skippy Jones, Danny Long, and Teddy Mann. And, of course, around that time, he got into, you know, NBC actually introduced several members of Tomorrow's Champions, including Tony Aiello, Johnny Bumpus, Davey Moore, Alex Ramos, you know, Rocky Lockridge, Tony Tucker. And then Bobby Chez came along, and he was among that group. You know, he was trained by a guy by the name of Tommy Parks, and also Joe Greer had a lot to do with Bobby's coming up. He won his first 20 bouts. He even won the state title when he beat Olympian Reggie Jones. And, you know, he won the middleweight championship of New Jersey. And then he became a rated fighter, you know, in the top 10 in the world. I believe it was in 1982. And they matched him against, you know, a guy by the name of Mustafa Hamshaw. And, you know, Hamshaw was a little too strong for him at that time. You know, Hamshaw just got done fighting Marvin Hagler, and he put a really good fight on him. And so that was Bobby's first defeat. Then a few months later, you know, tragedy really happened. You know, his father always said, I will never kill myself except for 2 reasons. If he was terminally ill, or if you don't love me, son, he said, not your brothers, not your mother, you. So that's how close he was to his father. But he had an argument with his father this one night, and he said some things that he, you know, he shouldn't have said. And, you know, then that night he came back to apologize, and, you know, his father just stared out in the wilderness, more or less, and, you know, didn't pay no attention to him. So Bobby, you know, gave up about apologizing and went upstairs. And, of course, the next morning he came down and found his father shot himself dead, you know, in his room, in the living room. And Bobby felt so bad that he wanted to get the gun and shoot himself. But his brother took the gun and took the bullets out, so Bobby couldn't get a chance of doing that. But that kind of devastated Bobby really for the rest of his life. I mean, he started drinking, and, you know, he was never really mentally sound as he would have been. I mean, just imagine finding your father in a living room, you know, shot to death. But,
you know, not to cut you off, but you talk about the tragic things. You know, Bobby had a good career. You know, like any other fighter, he had ups and downs and in between. And at the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame, I seen him. He looks better than I seen him in a long time, Henry. What do you think?
Well, he did, but
I think he's getting himself back on track.
Yeah, he doesn't have a really good job right now. I mean, he actually works at a ShopRite, you know, in South Jersey, you know, but he is working.
He's staying employed, and he's getting his life back.
Yeah, he is staying employed, and you know, he's trying to work through, you know, his problems and everything like this. I mean, you know, he did win, you know, 3 world titles if you count the WBU. You know, he won the light heavyweight title, the cruiserweight title, and then the super cruiserweight title. And you know, he fought some of the best around, even Evander Holyfield. I mean, he was one of the like matinee idols of boxing. He was on just about every magazine cover around. You know, he's a good-looking white guy that could speak well. I mean, he was in the Meza Club of high IQ. You know, he went on to be a commentator for Showtime for 11 years. You know, he was an excellent commentator, you know, and I thought he was, you know, in the class of his own doing that. But, you know, he would always tell it like it is, too. And, you know, he would say things on the air, you know, against promoters. You know, the promoter's fighter, you know, would win. You know, maybe the judges would sway this way or that way. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, he would open his mouth that way. And, of course, you know, he got in a little hot water with a couple of car accidents and everything. And, you know, they let him go. But hopefully, you know, he can get back on track, you know, because he'd be a great commentator for any organization, whether it's Showtime, HBO, or NBC, CBS, or you know ESPN. I mean, I think he would be an asset to people.
Yeah,
you know,
I interviewed him when he was down there. He sparked. I mean, before we start the interview, I said, "Bob, you're back." He said, "Hey, look, it never went nowhere, bro. It's down in the belly." He said, "I got it. I said, "Well, that's good." We sat down, man. He gave us a heck of an interview, and I thanked him for that. He's still witty. He's still witty.
Oh yeah,
and one thing. A lot of guys, they can fight the game, but they can't talk the game.
He's a great talker, and he'll show up anywhere you want him to show up. Like I'm, you know, have something to do with the AAIB. We're running the golf tournament, and all the money goes to kids that go to college. He shows up every year to that tournament, you know, and just socializes with people. He plays golf, you know. He's not very good at it, but you know, he hangs in there and goes with a foursome, and people enjoy him. People enjoy having him around, and he takes pictures with everybody, signs autographs. I mean, he's one of the really true, you know, nice guys in the you know, in boxing that I've ever met. So I mean, you know, I really like the guy.
We have 60 seconds. I like him, too. 60 seconds. In closing, Henry.
Well, the thing is, you know, people say, you know, who's the best fighter ever from New Jersey? You know, outside of Mickey Walker and, let's say, Ike Williams, Joe Jeanette, you know, maybe Walcott, Lestovich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bobby Chez is up there, too. Bobby Chez is probably in the top 10. In the history of New Jersey boxing. I mean, I don't think, you know, winning, you know, 2 or even 3 world titles and doing the stuff he did. I remember even one time he was coming into the ring commentating for Showtime, and he was actually fighting at the same time. I mean, how many people can do that? I mean, you know, he was a special guy, and he still is.
Yeah, he still is, without a doubt. You know, and our prayers go out to him. And also, you know, we're talking about different people struggling. We opened the show earlier with Amato family. We stand that he's sick. We send our blessings out to Bobby Chez and Jimbo, his family, you know, through sickness and thing like that, help. Man, we're just putting blessings on them. But in closing, I like to say my name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and our Hall of Fame boxing historian, Henry Haskopf. We'd like to thank all of y'all for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show, same time next week at 11 o'clock to 12. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Uh-huh.
Bye.